loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Matt McCartan, welcome back to The Crunch. It's good to have you back.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, Matt, there's a lot of things going on in the world of politics, and a lot of people look at things from, you know, a centre perspective or a right-wing perspective. And I thought to myself this week, you know what, I think we need to get a dark arts practitioner on the line and talk about some of the things that go on behind the scenes that give us an insight as into politics from a left-wing view. And it doesn't mean it's right or wrong, and you and I have known each other for a long time and operated in the back room on various different things, so sometimes against each other, but we've always had a convivial ability to communicate with each other. Now, you know, the most thing that people are talking about at the moment is the US election.
Yeah.
Right. Now, if you've got a dud leader and you're an advisor to that dud leader and you have a debate debacle like what happened to Joe Biden, what would you do?
Well, it's obvious what needs to be done. He needs to step down.
Yeah.
But if Dave Axelrod did, who's another campaigner, and he was the one who ran Obama's successful campaign, his first one. You know, I liked his sum up. His good campaigners do. They make it pretty simple. Well, what do you have? Denial, delusion, and defiance.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got all three. And what you have is, Mike Moore, the left-wing filmmaker, was saying, yesterday, it's like him going on that show to do that interview or that debate was elder abuse. By his. I actually think that Biden's handlers are amateurs. And I'm sure you'd have to agree with me, right, as people that we've run campaigns. His advisor must be a small group. He's got into group thinking, and with the wife, the American politics is funny. They have their partners as kind of co-leaders, you know, where we don't have that tradition, thank God.
Well, and not every case. I mean, Ronald Reagan had Nancy Reagan, but she was, she took a back seat to everything.
Well, not entirely. She'd be going through the horoscopes, and they would be trying to convince them of certain things. So, and when he got Alzheimer's, the only stage of Alzheimer's, that she was a very important player. You know, and what they've got, those first ladies, which they all have been up to now, they get their own office in the White House with staff. I mean, that's astonishing, and the influence they have on it. And so Jill Biden is claiming way out of line and sort of influence on Biden. You're no Christian.
Last week I made a comment about Jill Biden's the one most responsible for pushing dear old Joe. I mean, I don't agree with his politics, right? But he does look like dear old Joe Grandpa who's forgotten everything. And being pushed forward by Jill Biden. Anyway, this commenter said to me that it was the most appalling thing that I've ever said, bringing in his wife. And I thought, hello, have you been watching and paying attention? And you've just said that, you know, the First Lady has an office in the White House, and you see Jill Biden pushing Joe Biden forwards at every event. She introduces him. She winds up his speeches. She guides him on and off the stage. She's involved, right?
She's what they call, you know, we call I don't know what the term is these days, but you call them the body man, right? And it's the person who's with the candidate the entire time, making sure they don't trip, making sure they get to the right place, make sure they don't look in the wrong direction, making sure that they speak to the right people, etc. That's what she's doing. She's the personal campaign manager. That's what she is. And she's never been a candidate herself, never been in politics before. And they just said, tried what?
She wasn't an intern, though, wasn't she? That's how she got to meet Joe Biden after his first wife died.
I didn't know that, but that could mean, because we know about a former president sort of an intern that doesn't go well. But What we've got, you see, and they say, oh, we're going to have the photo shoot with his family at Camp David. And the son goes, you know, the one who the wrong son died. And so Hunter goes along there. He's the most senior of the family there. And him and Jill are pushing his days in. And of course, everyone goes, what are the granddaughters all supposed to do? Oh, granny, pop, don't run. They're not, you know, it's just a group thing. And that's what's going on the whole time. Everyone can see it, the emperor without clothes. And they will lose, if he stays in, they'll rip the party apart. They will go into a state of depression and they will lose. And his comments of saying the other day when he was asked, I'm just going to do my best. As long as I've done my best, if Trump wins, well, then I just know that I'm okay. What? What? And it's like that arrogant, that hubris. Look, I've always thought that Biden, he comes across with his grandpa, you know, and decent and he's honourable and that. But, you know, you've watched him for years until he had, and I have, right? He's been running for president since he was 23, and, you know, and Obama got him in, you know, got him in, he got in the country at last. And, you know, he's had, I think, quite a success from a centre-left point of view. But Abe catches up with us. And, you know, the Americans don't know when to leave the state. You know, they keep staying. We don't have that culture here in the country. But, and your listeners, some of the practitioners will know, and you're listening, like, America being the first democracy, you know, it's really got an imperial presidency with the checks and balances, but the checks and balances don't work. And they never would work. And what the rest of the Western world has to varying degrees is parliamentary democracy. So if someone is gaga, the caucus can replace them. And they do. Because they, and if there was a vote of all the elected reps in the Democratic Party, that Biden will be out in an hour. No question. But because of them, they say, so we've tied all the delegates at the convention, which is the group that votes on it officially, but that's just the rubber stamp. But they're all done to him. And then he says today, well, they can challenge me at the convention, which, you know, Phil, well, they can't. It's crazy. You know, and so he is also now being defiled. And that's a new way for him to be exposed, I think. And so it's just a train wreck. I think he will be dumped. He will capitulate. Because once those Democrats all see they're about to lose their seats, that will give them a focus.
See, the thing is that they've got the 25th Amendment, but that is damn hard to use to get rid of a president.
Well, they can't get rid of a president. Like, they even when you impeach them twice, when you go to the Senate for the crime, but yeah, and I know it's a different thing. Like, you need 66 of the court. They said it's never going to happen. The other thing about the chapter 20, 25th Amendment, yeah. Yeah, where they think, but that means the cabinet's got to initiate that.
Well, no, actually, it's the vice president. The vice president has to go to the cabinet, then the cabinet has to take it to the floor of Congress, right? So, yeah. So you know how political process works. You never go for the king unless you can get the king, right? Yeah. So that means Kamala Harris, who wouldn't know how to count to 10 even if she used her fingers.
Well, that's a bit.
She has to learn how to count.
Yeah, well, you're reading a bit mischievous here, but she is part of the problem too. She's not, see, vice president, in my view, they get handpicked because they're safe.
And they should do a lot of work to take the load off the president, shouldn't they?
Well, we know it's all just a show. Vice presidents have no power, they just there. But Biden is over on the other side of the country, picking someone from the west side, a woman, someone who's not white. You know, she ticks the boxes like you are now, the vice. She should go, well, then they should have a complete clean, I know it's late, but Jacinda Ardern in our country was the late pick and she won. So you can still win at a late, because it changes the whole thing, you know, news, press, you know, change. Big loss for both. Yeah,
you can do that. But the problem the Democrats have got is the sunk costs so far of the Biden campaign. And the reality is the front runner, really, from looking at everybody. I mean, there's a whole lot of people. You and I could name some names and no one would know who they are, right? But if we said Gavin Newsom, everyone would know he's the governor of California. He's the one who's actually out there. If you look at his feed on X and on Facebook, he's actually making a play to be the candidate. You know, he's given
He's been in the victim for 3 years.
No, exactly.
Surely not. Well, you're all those friends going on Fox News and debating with the Santas and around the country, doing ads around the country. He's just still doing it for the good of California, I'm sure. It's like Winston. Have he been the MP for Carroll? I'm not ploppy. So Gavin is out there every Sunday being very supportive of the president, if the president wants to continue.
Yeah, but he's the governor of California and he's making speeches in Philadelphia.
Now, what if people want to share his love to the country about the greatness of California? No, you're absolutely right. He is the one. He's the brand. That's who. Now, a lot of people don't like it. Doesn't matter, right? In my view, if I was had a play there, I'd go with him. And I know all the problems they can point to about California, obviously. But as you know, with a campaign with Trump, none of that matters. What about the scrape? You know, and it's about
someone who can fight.
And what the Democrats, they want a champion. Send us your champion. They send you out a wheelchair-bound guy who's chuckling around. That's your champion. Trump is, you're a micro.
Let's face it, Trump's a bully, and he knows how to bully people very, very well.
He's done it all his life, right, and got away with it. So here's the thing. It's a winning thought for him. Everyone is scared of him. Newton is not. He'll revel in it. So what you got is a guy who's young and vibrant and, tough nut, and good up himself too. We'll even die for a politician. But I think they need someone like him. There are some others. They won't bore your audience with names because, they're just names.
There is one other name, though, Matt. And again, it was a reader who said, oh, Cam, your analysis of the United States when I was talking with Olivia Pearson, your analysis of the presidential race was typical, just simple, red versus blue. And, what about Kennedy? Now, and I know that my analysis of what's happening in politics is never just red versus blue, right? There's nuance to everything. But what about Kennedy? Is he a dark horse? Could the Democrats perhaps select him or make him on the same ticket as Newsom? Or is he too much of a dark horse or a maverick to try and corral? I mean, I think some of the things that he says...
Why are you saying this? With a straight face.
Some of the things he says are...
Everyone says, why can't we just all hold hands and just have a nutcase come in and, a basket case, he's a drug convicted fellow, and still taking them like that. And, ego narcissist, Why can't... And there's vice president, William Dollar, his running mate, that's why he couldn't go, you've got to... Ross Perot, I think, was the last serious third-party candidate.
Yeah, and we didn't get...
And at least he was self-made. He vote and touched to some of the issues, which people want. And you've got to give him some respect, right? And, these third-party candidates are running. He's not the only one, but he's obviously the one with the brand and the money now. And that's not because of them, it's because of Biden. Those candidates are center-left candidates, by and large, right? And, there's about four of them now, five now, that old Mariana, whatever name it, come back in again. That's because everyone knows that Biden, the Democrat candidate, is weak. And so playing away sort of at you. You're funny enough with Kennedy, just as many Republicans will back with them on the back Trump. They can't bring themselves to vote for a Democrat. So here's a general protest candidate.
Look, vote splitter, really, isn't he?
Well, he is, but it's not about him, right? It's about the disillusioned vote. And you don't have a parliamentary system or like we had at NEP, you have weight to vote for people. Can't bring themselves to vote for the other team, so they'll give it to him or one of the others. But that will hurt Biden. I mean, Biden's proof. And anyone who gets up and puts their pants on correctly, you know, when they get up in the morning, like everyone knows that Biden. Now, the only reason that Biden has any chance of succeeding is not because of him, but because of the anti-Trump vote. That's the only reason. It's all about Trump, not about Biden. In terms of the chief. But Biden is he buggered them out, really.
The Democrat strategy seems to have been to use lawfare, to smear Trump, to denigrate him, to do all of this, and yet he's still forging ahead. So you'd have to say, from a strategist's point of view, tying someone up in lawfare means that they get unearned, free publicity where the public only hears Trump on the news. That is, in my experience of, you know, 40 odd years in politics, and you're about the same, that in my view is the worst thing that you can do, is to have other people talking about your opponent all the time in the media.
I think that it feels a lot like amateur hour than in the state in terms of campaign, right? You know, having Trump on trial on the case, you know, in New York, you know, it feels like, you know, it was a parking ticket case. If he hadn't have been running for the presidency, they wouldn't have made it, right? They wouldn't have. And people know deep down they wouldn't have done it. Now, is he guilty and all these things? Absolutely. But to the alienated voter base, which the Democrats have pushed away as well, like a lot of these people who vote for Trump used to vote for the Democrats as well. That's working class. And flowering movement against, and that's all over the world, including this country, right? There's working class people used to be on the left now, don't see it as their home, but they're pushed away. And so what's happened is this resentment and against the system, and Trump is that kind of unreasonable voice that goes against it. And they think, well, someone is expressing my anger and hatred of the system and of the people who run it and things. So what's happened is that when Trump gets up, as you know, and all your listeners are aware, is that every day in Washington, in New York, he was on Tonton News all day with his message. Now, the fact that it was true, it didn't matter, right? Because he wasn't a rebuttal. It wasn't like two people come out, you know. Trump is guilty. He's a crook. He's going to jail, you know, and there's all the reasons why. So they get their 5 minutes for their messaging. Or it was with Trump coming out saying, this is a scam. I'm making that. I'm in these set up and so on. That's all you hear day after day after day after day. And then they get surprised by no guy coming back and knock them.
Well, that's the thing is that if you look at Nate Silver, one of the best pollsters in the world, right?
Yeah.
He says it's a baked in result for Trump,
yeah.
Right? Because everyone knows he's a rat bag. Exactly. Everybody knows he's a braggart. Everybody knows he's a bully. Yep. And they don't care.
That's right. Of course, the hatred of those who rule them is far out right. They actually enjoy watching the elite swim, and they love them.
Right, you're watching a scallywag and a rascal, campaign doing the same things every election, and getting in, and it's a delight, you know. For people,
but
like,
you see a lot of that politics, but it's driven by, you know, the resentment of people who have not done, who have been pushed out of the growth. The new world order, promoted by the left as well as the right, yeah, the elite right, not the rank and file right, but the elite right and the elite left, right? And so, yeah, free trade is good, you know, we can trade up, you know, technology is all good, AI is good, you know. Now, the fact is that you can't work and earn a living and have the manner of being able to raise your family is not important, you see. It's your fault. And so what we have is not a left-right fight now, it's the have and have not fight.
And I think on that, you and I agree, Matt. You've come full circle and I've come full circle, and we've ended up pretty much at the same place where we've got these ruling elites in these large parties that actually ignore what is going on in society. And a classic case is Chris Hipkins last weekend standing up and saying, you know what, I'm going to listen to Aucklanders. Well, hang on, mate. That's the same playbook that every opposition since, Noah was a boy has used. It's like, let's go out and do a listening tour. You have a look at who did it. Bill English did it, right? David Cunliffe did it. Phil Goff did it. They've all done it. And how did it work for them? You're not particularly well.
Not really about the truck. As you know, right? It looks patronizing because it is.
Mm.
No one believes you believe that because you're from Wellington. So they don't believe that you care what it'll compete. You just want to pretend. Now, here, what? You know, you and I would like to think that we give them advice, but I just use. What people want to hear is, yeah, we got it wrong. And here's how we got it wrong. If you know with what you got wrong, you got no business in being in politics. Well, go and speak to the head, speak to the people. You wander around and speak to people who agree with you or are polite to you, because Kiwis are polite. So no one, you don't really get through, right? What you've got to do is you've got to know. If you don't know why you've lost Auckland, then you don't have business in being in politics.
You're right, though. Kiwis are polite. You know, in all of the dirty politics years, when you and I still were talking, and we still do, you know, we ignored Nikki Hager, you and I. But no, I only had one person who ever said anything, but from the protection of his car as he drove past. One person. And yeah, if you believe the media, I was the most hated person in New Zealand politics in 2014.
That's all true. You were. But pretty quite Italian. I'm cooked.
They are too polite, because only one person ever said anything.
No, because you're...
And you know, I once was talking to Max Bradford just before he got tipped out of office, you know, in when Helen Clark took over. And he was saying to me, oh, he says, I walk down the street in Wellington here, and people that I normally bump into and talk to, they're crossing the road. I said, that shows you're going to lose, mate. And he didn't believe me. And I said, well, you'll find out. Already your phone will have stopped ringing, right? So come the election, your phone definitely will stop ringing. No one cares. Well, as soon as they're crossing the road to avoid talking to you, you're losing.
Oh, you mean they were crossing the road to avoid him? Oh, I thought you'd cross the road to come and see him.
No, crossing the road to avoid him. You'd see them coming down the street, and then they'd see him, and they'd cross the road. And he was saying that. Oh, wait, because you're a loser.
New Zealanders are fluid to say now. New Zealanders are inherently polite. And always. And it's now, like our friends who are overseas people, when they come here, they think it's very, it's sort of at them daring. But after they've been here a while, they actually think that they're not inherently polite. They're passive aggressive. You feel that they're very passive aggressive. You know?
So if you get Chris Hipkins turn up to your workplace because he wants to listen, he stands there in the lunchroom, you're already on the back foot. You're thinking, why don't you go away, mate? I'm having my lunch, right? And then he starts talking to you. You're not going to say anything. You want him to leave. Anyone who asks a question is going to encourage him to stay, you know. And so you're right. It never works, because you're pissing off most of the people, and the ones who do talk to you are usually the sycophants anyway.
More people just want to – look, I find that those things just embarrassing, because someone will get up with a pet peeve about something which got nothing to do with it there, and they go, oh, all right, you say, pretty shut up. Because it's just doesn't mean anything, right? I'm here to listen to you. Well, don't you know? The man on the street, I need to hear. They won't say, I'm busy. Can you get out of my way? Because I've got to get to work, or I've got to get home, or I've got to get out of my lunch. You're right. But anyway, look, I think the point is, we expect our politicians to know their minds and to be conviction. You know, the one who had conviction. Look at the rising of, I use some quotes, the new right. You know, look at the Farangi, look at and the Le Pen and the others. What they are is, and left used to have it too, right? Conviction politician. They say, this is what I believe. They're not trying, the same with Trump. We're not trying to win the middle ground. We want the middle ground to come to us. We stand for something. And I think what the center left does badly is they think they chase the center ground. And so does the center right. And that's where you have, in France, for example, you have a collapse of the traditional two parties, the Socialists and the Republicans. They're still here, but they're in a very small, we wouldn't even think about it. So Macron, you know, doesn't form the centre of his party as a way to defeat the traditional right party. What's happened though is, you know, the conviction politicians of the left and right are actually what's winning the mood. So we had, you know, the Republican front and the rally and the Republican right rally and the pen crowd. Is that they're the ones who are capturing the imagination. You just see that all over the world, it's always conviction politicians who catch them.
You look at the UK and you look at France, and I've seen the statements from Christopher Hitchens saying, this is great for the left. We're seeing the left rise. I'm not sure he's reading the same tea leaves that I am. I'm seeing that incumbent governments that were there when COVID was in place are being replaced. It doesn't matter whether they're right or left, right? So the Conservatives in Australia got tipped out in favour of Labor. You know, people are having second thoughts about that now. Labor's just won a massive election in the UK and think that, you know, it's because of the merits of their argument rather than everyone was just sick of the Tories. With their corruption and nepotism and everything else that goes with, you know, UK Tory politics. And then you've got Marine Le Pen surging in, you know, she in the second vote in their strange system, you know, she didn't do as well because the left...
Well, because you quite lined up there. Yeah, everyone just lined up. But you're right. But here's the thing, did you know? It's what was the battle cry of Labour, you know? We aren't the Tories.
We aren't the Tories. It's the same as National did here in the last election, right? We like Labour, but less shit.
And you know as well, but is that, you know, governments lose, opposition don't win, you know? And, you know, the Tories have been in for 40 years. I couldn't say, you know, is that going to go on forever? But we get sick of them, they won't change. And Labour won from the previous election, got 2% more. That in mind. You talk about landslide, the first part of the post, and because the vote was splitting, they came through. France was different because it was, as you would know, that after when de Gaulle, post war, it's basically imperial presidency, and a lot of the power, certainly in foreign affairs and military, is all on the presidency. And the parliament, why they had that two-step period, de Gaulle wanted to get rid of the decrees. So what they do is you all got to run and then it cut down to it and have another round between the two top because it should be the Socialists and Republicans, you know, who come off. And so it's a safe bet who gets the numbers. What's happening, unfortunately for them, loss of confidence, the cracks of the centre, is that the Le Pen crowd have risen and then the far left has risen. You know, and that was 4 weeks. So when we talk about Biden, well, the left, hard left, in 4 weeks, went from nothing to now the biggest number in Poland. That's why the times can go like that, because then they have social media and instant news. So each country has its own reason, but your analysis is correct. It's that it's not a left-right thing, it's an incumbent and challenger.
Yeah, and a fight back against what people perceive to be the elites, whether it is or not. And that's why it's strange when you see Biden came out on Tuesday saying, it's the elites of the Democrat Party and they don't
because the elites, because Bernie Sanders had the numbers on the rolls, Obama and all the elites went and they pushed everyone into voting for Biden.
Biden's the ultimate elite candidate, isn't he?
He was the elite candidate and still is. So he goes on about the elites and say, mate, but we know it's desperate times for him. Look, I don't mind him, but he's just, you know, 80 years old and he looks like 100, you know? You've got
him with Winston Peters, right? There's a big difference, isn't there? There's only 1 year difference in age.
Well, that is true. And look, we're given up on weight and weight for Brinkley to die. I Yeah, I remember hearing breakfast with him about another year, and I thought he'd be then. I thought, I'm being that good. He'd been in and out of Parliament. And then I didn't go, oh, I'm thinking about retiring. I said, oh, give me a break. I said, they will take you out of this place in a box. He's never retiring. And we should just get rid of that nonsense idea. And he's having too much fun.
Well, he's able to have fun because Luxon's so weak.
Well, exactly. He's managed that centre party line of working with both major parties. Like that breakdown with Labor with Winston was astonishing, as how that was mishandled. And when Hipkins was on the ropes during the election campaign, he was bad mouthing Winston big time. We will not go in with him. And I'm thinking, for what? For what? Right? Learn to count. Learn to count. And I've broken down, right? And I was saying to the Labour crew a couple of weeks ago when they were, probably moving forward, and I said, you know what? Here's the problem. You had a majority in your own right. You could have done whatever you like. And you did nothing. We've had this discussion before. What if the Ardern government or the Hipkins government? They could done whatever they like, pass whatever they like, transform the country in their own mould, and got away with it. What they did,
They had these lofty promises and zero delivery. I mean, she promised in 2017 light rail to the airport by 2022. And not a single millimetre of track was laid, despite $200 million.
Well, because you had the numbers in Parliament, you'd done whatever you like, you could have just done it. And at least you'd be able to point to saying, this is what we've done. And when Hipkinsey took over, and a year, you just think, you just go for broke. Just go for broke.
What I found amazing, Matt, is that Winston Peters forever. The consummate middleman who was happy to work with anybody if they gave him the right deal, they managed to piss him off so significantly that for the first time in 30 years, he came out and said, I'm not working with them.
I'm right. Poetry. And here's the thing, you see, with Winston, and you know this to be true as well, right? He's old school. Whatever you bring him, handshakes mean something.
Bye. You shake his hand.
And he's
That's
never,
the deal.
I've never known him to break a deal. When he shook hands, he's old school and never broke a deal. And it's astonishing that Labor, when they were in government with him, did not understand that about him and lied to him and told him things which weren't true. And then they get surprised that he then goes, feral on them.
Winston holds grudges. I know he does. He disliked Carter intensely, but he was still a professional, even though he had that dislike. And
he's very professional on those things.
But he holds grudges, and he never lets it go until he gets you, and even
No.
then he'll stomp it. And so, that's what I see the driver for Winston Peters behind the COVID inquiry. It's not so much to find out the truth of the COVID. We kind of know where that's going. I think he wants to see Hipkins and Robertson and Ardern squirming in the inquiry. That's what I reckon.
Well, that could be sure, but most people gone past COVID. They don't really care anymore. They're very wrong.
No, there's a lot of people who do care.
No,
The economy is suffering from it
well,
now.
I get
So,
that. Look, I think, for not very matter, but my company's work, they didn't address that in the election campaign. If I'd been Hipkins, you just narrow down and say, we did the right thing. I'm glad we did it. 20,000 New Zealanders are alive today because we took the hard measures. Now, could we have done some things better? I'd double Auckland early, all that. Yes, we could have. But we had to save New Zealand alive. 20,000 families are watching us tonight. We saved our loved one. And just be completely unapologetic. Just go for it. Now, the people who oppose them and those who have gone beyond COVID would have voted, but they will go to vote against them anyway, right? What? And it both grit and conviction. We did the right thing and we do it again. And we do it faster, we do it better, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they would have got their own vote, you see. But that kind of thing is what we're doing now. Oh, we go around looking for you. What do you think? So, well, don't you know? You know, it's like what you're supposed to know as a politician, kind of lead the country, kind of know your own mind. So, you know, I think it's just a symptom of the problem of the centre left, and probably a bit like the centre right too, you know, the very traditional, you know, because I think they have more in common with each other. You know, it's our turn now, and you take opposition. But what we've got is a new politics to the right of the centre right party, to the left, yeah, you know, to use own term. But they both are angry at the elite. They feel that the elite have not, they don't govern, you know. And so I'm just changing the topic just slightly, but it's the same thing. See, some DJ got the sack last night, or last night, because she got sent the question to ask about Biden from the White House. And she asked the question that the White House gave to Biden, so Biden could they now to the point, oh, on a radio show today, and oh, he was put under question. Well, they all vetted the question to Yahi. So people say we do not trust the mainstream press. They're interested in those who rule us. And this is one example. And so Biden's on the road. They give questions to Twitter, you know, and they get the answers and they know what's going to come.
And that's exactly what Ardern did, and that's exactly what Luxon does.
And what well, I don't know the detail of that, and I'll take your word for it. But what we have is the press they use as players in the game. Not putting, you know, holding power to account. And, you know.
That's where Trump wins, when he says the media are the enemy of the people, and everyone goes, it damn right they are, you know.
That's right. And we know that
he's a braggart, and he likes to exaggerate things, but that's what he is. Now, just before we wrap up, Matt, let's touch on a couple of things in New Zealand politics. What the hell is going on with the Green Party? I mean, we don't need to talk about specifics, right? But we've got James Shaw left. We've got Chloe Swarbrick doing all sorts of crazy stuff. You've got MPs self-immolating, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a systemic problem in the Green Party? From a backroom political operator, I really want your opinion on this.
I think the word's been there. And the Greens are a brand, you know, it's funny, in like that years ago when they first come up, and you know, we on the left were writing them off, and I said, oh no, brother,
they're still there.
No, I said at the time, I said, they have a nice color, right? And that's what's going to defeat the red color. Green is a better color than red, yeah, that's the future. And everyone will scoff at the card. And see, the Greens, you don't actually have to believe them up. I'm a Green.
They have integrity, though. You know, Jeanette Fitzsimons and Rod Donald were highly integrous people.
Yes, I know that they came from the left.
Yeah.
You know, we're conviction politicians, right?
Yeah.
Rod came out of the Labour Party tradition. Jeanette came from the Values Party. Right, Green. We are the talker into coming into the Greens. Same with, see, when the Greens formed, Rod and Jeanette joined later. When they're in their line, the Greens were in their line, so it was in our interest to have competent people who ran the Greens. I'm blue, green, et cetera, et cetera. But the Greens themselves have any ideological position you like. And what you've got is you've got people being elected as MPs on almost like, you know, it's a phenomenon of individuals who vote themselves. And the Greens pride themselves on being decentralized, and we are over them democratic. So if people just come in because we have to have at least 50% women, even more at the minimum of. So the people they've had trouble with, and it's not a female thing, but it's just a coincidence that's what it's been, is that people are going in underqualified, no links with politics at all, no links with the Green Party. They just come in, I'm an amazing person, they can speak at a conference, and suddenly they get word. Well, people get word and they vote for them in. And James has been doing the hard yard for years with a tradition in Green politics all the way. They either make it like a misery by deselecting him but not replacing him, and so he bleeds out there for months. And this is how they treat him. Oh, that's the Green, the way we, you know, we treat people. No, they don't. They don't look after their people, but the wrong people in there. The Green MPs in recent, you know, we know they will be, that they're falling like flies.
Mm.
And what it is one, they're not being, whether they get the right people in there. You, your father, who was involved in the National Party, but the selection of Canberra, you can look at, you got what are we doing here? I don't know if anything's going on. Like, oh, we don't like to do, not cohesive. Well, you know, that's just fearless. And then when they mess up, which they do, it's kind of like someone else has got to make the decision. Getting a lawyer in to it, you know, for 40 grand, you know, and paying the MP and sit outside for half of the time that she thinks he's in Parliament. Why they do an investigation on the obvious, you know? So what are the, I think that there's a lack of skill, there's a lack of responsibility back to the people who voted for them. They'd allow, there's about five MPs the last 5 years have been through this project, right? And then it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, we've got to get it right. No, you knew from day one what the problem was. Right?
So how would you handle it, man? I mean, I've got a fair idea. You'd probably sit the MP down that's been doing whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. They could have been visiting prostitutes or drinking heavily or whatever. It doesn't matter. You'd sit them down and you say, right, fella, we've got two choices here. One involves a sword and one involves a razor. You can fall on your sword and we'll let you go with dignity, or we'll cut your throat. And either way is messy.
So you're a harsher man than me. I wouldn't put it quite like that. I have a talk and I said, what's your future?
Mm.
And oh, I'd like to be the minister. No, I mean out of Parliament. What would your future be out of Parliament? And they go, okay. No. I'm a messenger. I'm not a negotiator. I'm not here to negotiate. I'm here for a message, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then I find out what they'd like to do outside of power.
And then you give them a job.
Help them. Say, look, we can help you because they come with skills, you see. Then they keep their mana. They keep their, you know, their salary, you know, because both of them are the best job they've ever had. By what would they say? They pay the most, they have the least work, and everyone all thinks their IQ jumped by 20 points. And they nerd before they went, and suddenly they can go to parties and people want to talk to them and hold on to every word. As you said at the start of the call, once they lose their job, the phone stops. It was never then, you know? So, but you're right, I've had to do that to a number of MPs, and fine, it's bloodless, you know? And it's done with kindness, and you know, you got to move on. And
you know, then you have a press conference and say, you know, due to family commitments, you know, I've decided to resign and move on.
And you eat tired, and you know, and you think about making move with, well, what's what to expect. So, but if you don't do that, this is what happened. You know, see, now what Winston quite rightly is saying to Chloe, the deputy, the co-reader, saying, well, the Greens have a way out now to say we want her out of Parliament.
Mm. Right?
Will they do it? Probably not.
Probably not, because
they're on your hands saying, oh, well, we believe in. No. This is about the people who voted for you. Parties need to stop going on. As you and I don't know, no one knows who the MPs are. We're not on the list. They just trust the parties, know what they're doing. They're going to put some people up who won't mess it up and will add to it. That's their responsibility. When they fail in their job to put decent people up with a balance of skill set and trust, then the party leadership has to move. They need to replace them and apologize. What they're doing now is wringing their hands, oh, what we can do, where we just bystanders through this nonsense. Why they're.
They look pathetic. They were begging her to resign. Like, they should have sat her down and said, what is it, like you said, what does it your future look like outside of Parliament?
Well, once she understands, we will move, had you expelled.
Mm.
See, that's never been put to her.
The problem the Greens have got, although hypocrisy's never troubled them ever before.
No, but what they've done is, see, I assume the news items don't again connect that soon as the late great United States Mary of the movement, she was opposed to expulsion of MPs. That was then, this is now, you know, and I never agreed with Jeanette at the time, but you know, they had this law that somehow the MPs, when they get elected, they're all saints, they're so special, and they had such honour. No, they're just ordinary people, and some of them make mistakes and shouldn't have been in the first place, and that's the party's fault. But anyway, that's it. They should say, And I'm with you. I wouldn't put the razor blade and sword down because it's a bit brutal. But my thing is with her, they say, look, Ricker, you need to resign because you put us at terrible risk and damage, you've damaged us. And if you don't go, you have no choice. We'll move to have you expelled from Parliament. Now, if you go, so look, I don't think it's entirely fair. My husband has, it seems to have made mistakes. I was involved in the business, but I've had to take responsibility of what he did. And I'm sorry to all the supporters of Vickery. That builds your goodwill. The next time that there's a committee when they're in government that may need someone on from road board or something who no one cares about, could you help them help other third, right? Because that's what you do with people that are experienced. So I look at this Green MP who got expelled from the caucus of ACDG for recon. You'll notice that no one from Waiheke has come out and supported her. That's telling.
Yeah.
Right. That's her local community.
Yeah.
Cricket. But they all know.
Tells you everything you need to know.
What that business has been up to. And the Greens have known.
Nobody in New Zealand is going to believe a word of it, of any word that comes out of her mouth that says, I didn't know what my husband was doing. It's a small business.
No, but it's a fig leaf. Because sometimes you just need to let people go. You know, and they got to go with some dignity. He said, look, I'm so sorry for the people who have raised these issues. There's a legal process underway. I can't speak about that. When I was going to run the parliament, I withdrew from the business and the running business. And my husband, I left with him, but that's a failure of judgment on my side. I should inquire more, whatever, you know. And I'm so sorry I put the Greens in this position in the community. And I
cry a river of tears, hand in your resignation.
And everyone goes, okay. Yeah, you know, but old gold is, you know, they, yeah, I think, but again, you see, and I, look, I know she had her trauma, but everyone who goes to crime had trauma. When is there one rule for the poor workers who make, or boys and craft, who make mistakes, or ordinary people who make mistakes and go to fire jail and get drink? You know, if someone from South Auckland went round to High Street store, family, tens of thousands of dollars when I'm a couple of hundred grand a year and then go, oh, well, I'm traumatised. Do you think that the judge go, oh, you poor thing. Oh, look, we'll let you off. Oh, it will cost me. And that's me. Right? And so, you know, we've got to stop this always allowing people to make excuses for their behaviour.
And it creates the impression that elites do exist because they get a soft blow through the...
I probably thought about it like that, yeah. So what we've had is they can dish it out and they're scraping all that and they're taking all the privilege and they get huge privileges, you know, vital and everything and, you know, that. And she goes, oh, well, you're a dick and I wanted to get caught. Well, can you just stop doing this?
Yeah, like she said that. I couldn't believe it when she said that. I thought, clearly someone as smart as Matt McCartan's not advising her.
Yeah, because...
That just doesn't cut it, you know. Like she said, I wanted to leave Parliament. Well, we just had an election. You could have said, I'm not standing.
Exactly. And so, look, I think whatever. And people, you go with your record. You and I, you see, we come from different school, right? In politics, in the civil society, you get involved in politics, and if you are, you know, you have very strong conviction beliefs, and you pray for or your team hardball. When you make a mistake or you do something wrong, you cop it sweet.
Yeah.
You don't go and complain.
No.
Sometimes you just shut up and disappear for a while. Why it calms down. You don't go, oh, well, you know, I feel everything.
I have mental health issues. I felt like resigning. Well, just resign.
And you say, shut. You know, because no one cares. It's not about you.
Yeah, shut up. Here's the door.
Yeah, and look, I don't mean that like, because I'm not a brutal person. But what I do think is about stop making it about you. You know, it's about the people who vote for you in a civil society for you to do your job. You don't do your job and you preach their values, but you're everyone else. And it's about hypocrisy. And when you do that, cop it sweet. Don't make it worse.
You know, one thing I know about you, Matt, is you speak quietly but carry a big stick.
Well, I speak quietly because what are you shouting? Yeah. And then you can hit them with a stick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks, Matt, for coming on and shedding some light on what happens in the back rooms of politics. It's always a pleasure, and we'll have you back again sometime soon.
All right, Matt. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Matt.
thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.